Thank you. And first, thank you very much for the invitation, Dave. It's a pleasure for us, of course, to be here talking about our research. And my name is Kjersti Fløtte. I am Professor Emerita since August last year in French Linguistics at the University of Bergen. I've been working on different discourse and text issues for many years within different theoretical frameworks, such as lexical approaches, narrative theory, and linguistic polyphony. And since approximately 2010, with focus on climate change discourse within the cross-disciplinary research group LinkLim, where Trine is one of the members. I will say a bit more on LinkLim in a moment, but you can, of course, also, as Dave said, you can also go to the LinkLim website for more information. And now over to Trine for a few words.
Right. Hello, everyone. My name is Trine Dahl, and I am a professor of English linguistics at the Norwegian School of Economics, which is also situated in Bergen, like the University of Bergen. So as Kjersti mentioned, I have been part of the LinkLim research group since the beginning. And then I have also participated as a project member at the LinkLim project. For my own research, in addition to being interested in climate change and lifestyle issues, I have in the past couple of years focused mainly on the concept of sustainability, and then particularly in a corporate communication context. So that's all for me right now, and Kjersti will start our presentation and I will do sort of the second part of the slides.
Thank you, Trine. And as you can see, Trine and I will present a study about arguments and words that participants in the survey think may motivate people to change their lifestyle in relation to the challenges of climate change. We'll first give some background information, then some details of the survey that constitute the basis of our research before presenting our main findings, ending with a few conclusions and implications. Now, the study I was trying to move. Let's see. So, there we are. The study we present here is part of the research undertaken within the cross-disciplinary research group LinkLim, which started in 2011 with a focus on the role of language in the climate change debate, more specifically on issues related to climate change itself, to energy transition and lifestyle. So one may ask, why this interest? Well, climate change has become a major global challenge which needs many kinds of approaches, not least on language and communication ones. And within LinkLim, we have undertaken different studies, but from 2020 on, we started the ClimLife project, financed by the Research Council of Norway. And in this project, focusing on lifestyle, our research object is how people meet the challenges of climate change in their everyday life, living with climate change. We know that there is broad agreement on the urgent need for action to mitigate climate change, but people must also go on living their daily lives, attending to the needs and interests of themselves, their families, and their community. So we wanted to know more about how people relate the climate challenge to their everyday life choices. Our research material is to a large extent provided through different surveys of the general Norwegian population, but also of more targeted groups such as the young and seniors of 65 plus of age. In this context, it also seems relevant to look at what the science says. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, that is the United Nations body for assessing the science related to climate change, they present an interesting perspective in their sixth assessment report. And for the first time, they give advice on lifestyle using the verbs avoid, shift, and improve. Let's see. Now, through this figure, in the Working Group 3 report, they illustrate the mitigation potential provided by 60 avoid, shift, improve options presented here. It is, of course, impossible for you to read this figure, but the options can be roughly grouped in transportation, aviation, buildings, diet, and renewable energy, as indicated by the colored symbols. The three columns show the estimated mitigation potential per person. We'll not go into more details here, but it is worthwhile, I think, to take a closer look at the various options if you are interested. So, back to our study. To our knowledge, there are few previous studies with a linguistic angle on our focus, but quite some within psychology, especially on emotions people have or express in relation to climate change. However, there are numerous studies on how people react to the question about what should be done. For example, one study done in collaboration with the LinkedIn group and published in 2017, where we analyzed more than 4,000 text answers from Norwegian respondents and categorized them in the following topics: better public transportation, energy transition, emission reduction, international collaboration, government measures, and lifestyle with reduced consumption. Now, this study encouraged us to undertake further studies specifically related to lifestyle, a perspective developed in the CleanLife project through, for example, a survey from 2019 with open-ended questions on motivation for change and reasons for no change, which was published in 2021. Based on answers freely formulated by more than 1,000 respondents, Norwegian citizens, the material was structured in different topics, from those motivated to contribute to those claiming they already live a climate-friendly life. And we find in general that those who are motivated to change their lifestyle do so, not for financial, but rather for ethical and environmental reasons. And I will come back to this in a moment. But I would also like to mention that in several of the surveys undertaken within LinkedIn, we have seen that answers may also contain direct comments on language use. Many are complaining about negative language and too much gloom and doomsday scenarios, expressing a clear wish for hope and more encouraging language. And these findings encourage us to undertake the study we will present here. But before moving on to details about our study, I just want to come back to some results of our previous study based on the survey in 2019 that I just mentioned, about what the respondents pointed at as motivation for change. We think this may be interesting in a comparative perspective with the study we present today. The results that you see here are based on 876 answers among a representative sample of Norwegian citizens that were analyzed and structured in six different topics. And here you see the proportional presence of each topic in our database. The first and largest one, I consume less, reuse and recycle, is in fact not an answer to the question about motivation, but just an enumeration of what they consider to be climate-friendly actions. We may wonder why this is so, but I will not go further into details here about this. And we see that the other topics are quite evenly, more or less at least, represented. I want to contribute. I care about the future of children and grandchildren. I assume responsibility for nature. I am preoccupied with climate and environment. And I'm motivated by knowledge and fear. So this provided an interesting overview of what may motivate people expressed in their self-reports, but we wanted to study what they would say if they were to motivate other people. And this leads us to the main study we'll present here. The study is based on a survey undertaken by the Norwegian Citizen Panel, a representative national research purpose internet panel at the University of Bergen, with over 6,000 active participants. The survey was fielded during the period mid-February to mid-March last year, and we chose again to use an open-ended question due to our previous fruitful experiences with respondents being able to formulate their views in their own words. The answers to such open questions are heterogeneous and provide nuanced and rich data. They bring in different voices, embedded in constructed narratives, and colored by the respondents' own framings. And our question was formulated, as you can see it here, This question is about climate and language. How climate is talked about may influence people's willingness to make climate-friendly choices in their everyday life. Imagine that you were given the task to motivate people to live in a climate-friendly way. What words or arguments would you use? And as a start, we have approached the material through a word frequency analysis, then accompanied by a machine analysis through the tool structural topic modeling. But we have to say that, as of now, all the analyses are not done, so the study has the status of more work in progress, but we think we can already present some interesting results. And we received answers from 4,070 participants with a total of more than 71,000 words provided by this survey, thus a quite large data set. The answers varied in length, with an average of 17 words, but many were long, up to 100 words and even more. And a general first impression was that the answers were primarily constructive rather than containing a rejection of doing the task. And we were surprised that there were hardly any traces of the quite typical excuse saying that my actions don't matter. Some respondents even presented a meta perspective on the task of answering the question. So quite clearly, a question that many took an interest in. And now, I should also say that all the examples we will show, they are all over translation from Norwegian. And now we will take a quick look at how this meta perspective that I just mentioned, how this meta perspective approach may be expressed. And first, an example where the respondent assumes a communicator role, taking into account that different people have different interests and thus trying to focus on what is relevant to the persons they approach and what may be most effective. So the example reads, depends on who I'm talking to. Most people have an issue that is close to the heart, which can be directly or indirectly connected to the environment. I would have steered the conversation based on what is important for the person I was talking to. And then the next part, if the person in question has children, it is probably most effective to refer to the children's future. Other persons respond better to animal welfare, etc. And the last part of this answer covers something we see in many other answers as well, namely a focus on a positive influence and to avoid negativity and fear. Regardless, I think it's important to meet people with a basis in their circumstances and focus on a positive impact and not go straight to negativity and fear. And now, an example where the respondent takes on the motivator role and on the one hand points at a common responsibility and on the other hand emphasizes, like many others, the opinion that the high standard of living and overconsumption have little to do with the quality of life. What matters is the simple everyday experiences and becoming a happier person. And I will read the example. We must all take responsibility and be willing to lower our standard of living. Remember that a high standard of living and outright gluttony do not equate to quality of life and peace of mind. Cultivate the simple everyday experiences, travel in the local environment, lower your demands and become a happier person who takes responsibility for a common future and for our children. Now, Trine will continue by presenting our main findings, and I will stop sharing here.
Yes, so I shall try to find the slides on my computer and we shall continue from there. Let's see. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So We shall have to find the slide where we then present, first of all, our main findings. So one finding that really stands out in our qualitative analysis is the reference to children and future generations as a motivating factor in persuading people to live in a climate-friendly way. Two other very frequently referred to entities are nature and the planet. When it comes to suggested actions, consumption and recycling are mentioned by a large number of respondents. So they want less consumption and more recycling. As for the results from our quantitative STM analysis, the following topics were identified in our data. Change everyday habits to make a difference. Live climate friendly for a better world. Take responsibility. Deal with climate change at a systemic level. So when we compare our two analytical approaches, we see that the systemic level aspect was only identified in the STM analysis. Here are a few typical examples from the qualitative analysis of our material. We must live for future generations. We must live in a way our children want to copy. Every bit helps. We humans are part of nature. Taking care of nature and preventing problems is to take care of yourself and your children. Everyone can do a little. Change consumption from a use and throw away mentality. Take better care of things. Buy used things. Buy less. Buy good quality. Everyone can contribute by thinking before buying. Use and recycle. Verbs expressing encouragement and request were used by many respondents. The phrasal verb take care of, which corresponds to the Norwegian verb ta vare på, is seen in many answers where the focus is on nature and the environment, serving to encourage and request a certain behavior. And I'll just read a few examples. We must take care of nature and the resources we have and manage them well. Make good choices for ourselves as well as the future. Take care of the environment as if it were your mobile phone, which then for this respondent seems to be a very valuable thing, obviously. Another verb category, that of cognitive verbs, is also very much in evidence in the survey answers, especially think, which corresponds to the Norwegian tenk, and sometimes also the Norwegian verb tenk corresponds to the English verb consider. So both those are reflected here. Think future, use your head. Think sustainability in everything you do. Think about the satisfaction in handing the world over to the next generation and know that you at least did what you could for not making the situation worse. So again, we see this reflection of the thinking of the next generation as very important. Some answers also contain advice on what words and arguments the respondent does not find to be effective. And the trend here, and that has already been indicated by Kjersti, the trend is clearly towards emphasizing the positive rather than the opposite. Two examples here. Would have used motivating positive words that inspire people to live in a climate-friendly way, rather than admonishing and moralistic words and arguments. The responsibility must first and foremost be placed with politicians. The individual should not be left with shame. I've highlighted the word shame here, since this particular word has received much focus in recent years. In Norwegian, at least, it has become a very, productive element in compounds like flight shame, oil shame, and meat shame. We have carried out surveys of both the young and the senior generation and their feelings regarding shame, and both groups tend to be negative towards it. And the occurrence in this example is, in fact, one of the very few instances of the particular word. I'll also read the second example on the slide. Don't use rhetoric that leaves people without hope for a good future. All the negative information about the world ending makes people not care anymore. They see that what they do can hardly matters when war and volcano eruptions, etc., destroy the globe. Use positive words linked to everyday life, the small things in life, how to make a good future for you and yours. Before I present some preliminary conclusions that we draw from the investigations that we have carried out so far with the current material, let me just make a very quick comparison between this study focusing on how to motivate others and the one we carried out in 2019, where the issue was what motivated the respondents themselves. There is likely to be substantial overlap between the participants in the two surveys, but the group is not likely to be identical. But there is that four-year gap. So here is what Kjersti already showed you. And we see that the topics of future, thinking about the future of our grandchildren and children, assuming responsibility of nature and being preoccupied with climate and the environment, they represent quite substantial slices of this particular pie chart. So if we then go back to the preliminary conclusions from our current study, we see that there is definitely concurrence between the results from the two studies. The same focus on future generations and nature are represented here. We also see, as sort of, again, preliminary conclusions, that the respondents to a large extent present or suggest a soft rather than a hard approach in their motivation efforts. There is much focus on encouraging people to do something, let's say in the form of every little helps, rather than rejection of the relevance of individual action. There is a diversity of cognitive and action verbs in the material, and when action verbs are being mentioned, there is often, again, this soft approach to what kind of action is suggested. And all this, of course, is in quite stark contrast to the language used by the young activist, climate activist Greta Thunberg, one of the very few individuals, in fact, who are mentioned in many of the studies that we have undertaken. There are a few, let's say, people who stand out as representatives of good and bad actions. So Greta Thunberg, especially by the young, is mentioned quite often. But her her language is definitely not very soft. And we see that in the following two examples, both from 2019, where she first of all gave a speech at the UN Climate Action Summit. "You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words, and yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering, people are dying, entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?" And then from her speech at the World Economic Forum, "Adults keep saying we owe it to the young people to give them hope. But I don't want your hope. I don't want you to be hopeful." So those were some of the preliminary findings that we see in our data. But of course, this material gives us a lot of opportunities for doing or undertaking more specific studies based on what we have seen so far. So here are some of the suggestions that we have come up with so far for how we can take this further. First of all, it would be very interesting to look at match our findings to variables like gender and age. There might well be differences within the data that could be revealed by looking at that in combination with the answers. It could also definitely be worthwhile to study the internal deliberation between different points of view in one and the same answer. And as we've seen, that some of them are quite long, so that could definitely be interesting stuff there. It would also be, we think, worthwhile to examine the use of deontic expressions, obligations. We must take seriously, and perhaps look at what statements are given this particular grammatical form. We could also, as Norwegians, at least, take a closer look at how the Norwegian paradox is represented in our material. So we call this the Norwegian paradox because we are, of course, an oil and gas producing nation, and we are also a climate change, well, we are worried about climate change. So how does that go together? And do we see reflections of this paradox in our material? And we would also, I think, we would find some interesting stuff in terms of looking at preferences of negative or a positive phrasing of the advice. So should one say, do eat less meat, or should you say, do eat more plant-based food? So this negative, positive phrasing we think, something that could be worth looking into. This issue of negative versus positive angling has been raised by, well, quite a few people, and it chimes well with initiatives within climate and sustainability communication that is currently being undertaken. And I thought we could look at very quickly at a quote from a conversation between sort of an American guru on the circular economy, William McDonough. And this is from a conversation that he had with two colleagues of mine at the Norwegian School of Economics. And the guru says, "Why have we locked ourselves into a doing less bad understanding of the economy? Why have we gotten this hang up on cutting everything to zero? The goal must be doing more good." So, if we are then to consider our findings in the context of climate change communication, our first point, which audience are we talking to, is most likely something that a professional communicator, at least, has foremost in their mind at any time, and something our survey participants also have emphasized. However, the prevalence of answers mentioning future generations seems to make this particular focus a general one that may be relevant for many audience groups. I think the next point that we mentioned on this slide was the one we were most surprised by: the importance that our respondents attached to the argument of individual action, even though, of course, there were also references to a collective responsibility. In terms of the efficiency of doom and gloom scenarios versus those creating hope, the trend, as you have seen or heard from our examples, is that the trend is clearly towards the latter, the positive angle. We end this presentation with a picture of the Linklim research group as of September last year, which, as you can see, consists of a great mix of young and senior members who represent several disciplines, including geophysics, media science, philosophy, and linguistics. This mix has been particularly useful in the kind of research we are presented today, both in terms of identifying relevant research questions and, more specifically, the survey questions. So, thank you for listening. We will, of course, publish the slides afterwards, and they will have the references that we have mentioned and some others, if for those of you who are particularly interested